We're all tied together, and we make it or we don't. From Salina, Kansas, and the Land Institute, we have been speaking with research fellow and author Stan Cox. You can find links to Stan and his works in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org, and please check out landinstitute.org. Stan, it was great to talk with you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. One of the world's leading climate scientists, Johan Rockström, has a dim view. According to The Guardian's environment reporter Damien Carrington, published October 27th, Rockström said, quote, "It's a really bleak moment, not only because of the reports showing that emissions are still rising, so we are not delivering on either the Paris or Glasgow climate agreements, but we also have so much scientific evidence that we are very, very close to irreversible changes. We are coming closer to tipping points," end quote from Johan Rockström. Please stay tuned to Radio EcoShock Weekly as we broadcast science-based truth about the greatest threat ever faced by humanity. No exaggeration, that's what it is, and it's a threat to our cohabitants, all the loving species here on planet Earth. Please stay tuned to Radio EcoShock Weekly as we broadcast science-based truth. Thank you for seeking out the hard truth, wherever it leads, and still caring about our world.
KBOO, Portland.
This is KBOO, Portland, Oregon. Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. And this is the Dirtbag program dedicated to all aspects, and I mean all aspects of edible gardening. We're here at Jim's recording studio in the countryside.
Welcome to the liberal nook.
Glenn. Jim Gilbert here with me, and across from us is our ace sound engineer, Joe Wilson of Bergman Productions. Look it up. You got any recording needs, he can help you. Boys, he helped us.
And you know, maybe some people don't know, there actually is a liberal Oregon, which is, for other reasons between incorporated towns, is between Molalla and Canby, and that's where we live.
How did it get that name between Molalla and
Canby?
Canby.
You know, it goes back a long ways.
Okay. I'm not going to go there, though. We've got faithful listeners in both areas, I'll bet.
I'll bet.
Yeah. Well, we are recording this a week ahead of time. And it happens to be a very wet week this week. But when this airs on November 9th, it might be colder.
But my guess is, Glenn, from what you've told me, you will be warmer.
Yes, that's right. I will be in the warmer climes of the Caribbean.
Yeah, maybe tell us just quickly where you're going.
Well, we don't know exactly. I mean, we're going to Cuba.
Cuba.
But I haven't paid close attention to the itineraries of where we're going to be.
Yeah, I think, you know, Cuba is just enough to know that you're going to be someplace a lot warmer than it's going to be here.
Yeah, I've been monitoring the temperatures there. And, you know, 80 down to 60, upper 60s at night.
Yeah,
this could be a good time.
Yeah, it'd be great.
All right. Well, so for our program today, we're not going to be able to take questions over the phone line, but if you have a question that something comes up, we do have our hot email address, thedirtbag@kboo.org. thedirtbag@kboo.org. And even if we were live, You can always write there if you'd like to have a question pondered by us. We don't necessarily give the right answer or even a good answer, but we'll give you an answer.
That's right. Right. And I should mention that when we do the garden stumper today, of course, you won't be able to call in the answer. So please send us the answer by email, and we will, the first right answer by the time it's received, we'll get the prize.
Yes. The prize being a free hand tool, a garden hand tool sharpening. Actually, I don't know. Maybe we would sharpen a chisel for you or something too. Yeah. But in any event, at Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland, there at the intersection roughly of 42nd and Alberta Street.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Coley Farm Store. Nice little neighborhood shop. But that's if you get the first correct answer.
Yeah, otherwise, you might have to pay for the sharpening, which would also be worth it, as we know.
Yes. We've talked about that in the last year, too, I think. Well, I'll give you a little rundown here on what we're going to be talking about today. Our plant of the month is oak leaves and how they relate to composting. And then I'll talk about, just related to that, about what to do. I'm not giving you my list of 50 ways to love your leaves. I kind of do that every other year type thing. But how I use leaves in the garden and what I do. We'll also get an update on some of the things that's going on the farm here in the Liberal Nook. Or is it just Liberal Nook, not the Liberal?
Well, you can call it the Liberal Nook.
Both. It's true.
It's our name for it, because yes, it's a little spike, a tiny little charming spot.
Yeah. But anyway, on this cider, you made cider in the last month.
Yes.
You pressed it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great.
And also quince and pineapple, both of which we have examples in front of us. And Jim even cut open a pretty large pineapple guava.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are some excellent varieties that I would like to talk about.
Yeah, and of course, we'll get to taste them.
Of course.
Probably not the quince, but pineapple guava. Also, just a little bit about dividing plants. We're getting to the dormant period now, and this is when you can divide or transplant plants. I'll particularly talk about rhubarb. This is the time that you can think about doing that. We have our dirtbag dictionary term, parthenocarpy. Yep, that's what Jim's going to talk about. And finally, Jim will follow up. We didn't have quite enough time last month to talk about Jim's trip in Italy, or visit in Italy, about olives there. And also, I'd like to talk a little bit about the prospects for it being a profitable crop in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
They can grow here.
Yes. We are right now processing olives in our kitchen. Uh-huh. Curing them, I think, is the right word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must not be a commercial crop yet, though.
It's probably about half a pound.
Oh, that's pretty good then.
If I could sell it for $1,000 a pound,
a couple meals, though, worth. Huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. And after taking a break last month about what's annoying me or what's not annoying me last month, I've come back to what's annoying me this month. And this has been going on for quite a few years now. And I just don't quite know what it means and I listen to a lot of radio. I think we all do. And the interviewee, the person who is answering, will oftentimes say, well, that's a good question. I don't know that they mean that it's a good question, but rather I want to talk about it, or the answer needs to be known. It could be that. But to me, it's just a little roundabout way to get to their point, maybe. I just don't know. That's what annoys me. You know, maybe it's just my inability to understand things.
Well, that's something for a subject for another show, I think.
Oh, we're not going to cover it. But we don't have enough time, whether I understand things or not. Okay. Speaking of oak. Okay. Our plant of the month, Joe got it. Jim's just disgusted. We're going to talk about the oak leaves and whether you should or should not compost them. And for that matter, I could even throw in pine needles. The reason that I'll deal with oak leaves first. Should you? Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Do it. It would be beneficial for all leaves if they were shredded first before they were composted. But do not worry about the amounts of tannins or so-called, that they're acidic or something like that. It's just not enough to deal with anything. You wouldn't want to incorporate them directly into the ground. Of course, that's true with just about anything. Rototill it in or something like that. No, compost it first. But do not hesitate to use oak leaves or use pine needles or other needles as a mulch around your perennial plants. And it doesn't have to be just acid-loving plants like strawberries or blueberries or whatever you have. Just use them.
I don't know if all oak leaves are the same, but the pin oak that was in our yard until the ice storm of 2020, the leaves from it took a long time to decompose compared to like maple leaves and some others. So I don't know if you've noticed differences between.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the tannins in them. There's just more there to deal with. Mm-hmm. And the pin oaks, if I remember correctly from my master gardener training, which, as I say these days, is less and less often, that the pin oak leaves stay on the tree for a long, long time. I mean, it can be March and they're still on it. Was that the case with you?
That's not our experience. They fell quite profusely.
Maybe it's another type of oak leaf then that I'm confusing that with.
Yeah, there are a lot of different kinds of oaks. And of course, the pin oak is a sort of red oak type. Years ago, I lived in the East Coast and I was doing woodworking and learned about oak. And the white oaks have rounded lobes on the leaves and the pin oak and the red oaks have pointed lobes on the leaves.
Uh-huh.
And the red and pin oak is in the red oak family, you might say. And the native oak, Oregon oak, Quercus garryana, is a white oak with the rounded lobes.
I see.
Interesting difference.
Mm-hmm. But. Well, I'll have to look back then and see which oak leaves it is that do tend to stay on the tree. It may be they come off with rain or ice. I mean, obviously they would, but.
We discovered in that ice storm that the pin oak is not well designed for the weather here, that kind of weather anyway.
It's not a native.
No, it just, we lost 75% of the branches, just came down all over our yard and some degree on our house and shop.
Yeah. Yeah, I lost at least 75% of my prairie fire crabapple. Just earlier this year in April when we had that snow because it was covered, it was almost ready to open up those beautiful pink blossoms, and so it was full of leaves and blossoms and then the snow, the heavy snow.
I think we didn't have that here, that was interesting that you had.
It was that Sunday, Monday, April 10th or something like that.
Very late for a snowfall.
Yeah. So anyway, use those leaves, and just about any leaf would, I'd say, any leaf is better than no leaves.
That's right.
And if you can run over them or shred them, run over them with the lawnmower, or if you let the street leaves get run over by cars and whatnot, you can do that too. I think some people are hesitant to use the street leaves, and I probably would be if it was in a major thoroughfare, but my neighborhood street, I'm not concerned about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I what I do for picking up street tree leaves, just to get them out of the gutter for one, is I use a pitchfork and I put the tines, kind of rock it up so the tines are on the ground, and then just walk behind it pushing it, and it stacks up the leaves. And when you get so many that they start to veer off, you can stop and just pick up a handful, put them in the garbage can or a can to transport them.
A wheelbarrow.
I tend to use a garbage cans. mm-hmm. just because I have not a lot of room in my garden, mm-hmm. and I can use a hand truck sure. to transport them. So
out here, the garbage cans have wheels on them.
Well, some of mine do too.
Yeah,
but not like a hand truck.
Yeah, I don't know how long those wheels would last if you used them on a regular basis for moving things. But
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I use that a lot. My garbage cans.
There's a lot of organic matter around.
That yeah, can, I mean that's really... the key. Is there's that organic matter? What because mm-hmm. what that does when it breaks down or mostly gets broken down, doesn't have to be fully broken down, is that it feeds the microorganisms in the soil, which in turn then will feed your plants. Mm-hmm. You know, we've always said, feed the soil, and the soil will feed your plants.
That's right.
And this is a great time because. You know, one of the ways to use leaves is to just put them on your garden beds because it's really too late now to plant cover crop. You might still get in some rye, but
pretty late.
It's pretty late. It's just too cold for them to germinate.
Yeah. It was interesting to me how quickly the weather changed.
Yes.
You know, it was hot, 90 degrees just a couple of weeks ago. And then bam.
10 to 20 degrees above normal highs or average highs. And now we're 10 or more degrees below average highs. You know, 58 would be around today, I think.
Well, it sort of feels normal to me now, you know.
Yeah.
And we got our cover crop planted within basically almost like minutes before the rain started. We finished. It was
good
like
timing.
Yeah, it was really great. And it's coming up.
Well, I'm still harvesting peppers and tomatoes from the garden. So, of course, those I won't be planting cover crop there. Sometimes I actually do seed around the tomato plants. I didn't do that this year, but they'll get leaves, shredded leaves on the bed. And then next year, before I plant, I don't rototill my soil at all or even hand turn it. I'll just move away handfuls of leaves to reveal the spot that I'm going to plant to squash.
I think the fall harvest is really inspiring. My partner Lorraine is the main garden person, and she harvested peppers and roasted peppers and dried peppers, and we have winter squash and of course tomatoes, like you said. I mean all that, and it's like it's really pretty darn easy to grow your own food in large quantities. And it's fun. I mean, and talking a little bit about the cider pressing we did, my daughter came down with our three grandkids. The oldest is 7, and he stayed an extra week with us and helped dig potatoes. Amazing amount of potatoes. I mean, we don't usually eat a lot of potatoes, but I told Lorraine, I said, maybe we need to start eating potatoes because we have so many. And sweet potatoes, regular potatoes.
You grew sweet potatoes?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should get Lorraine on here then, see how to... Let's do that.
It's pretty easy, you know. And yeah, I'm sure she could talk about that.
Okay.
And then my grandson's name is Owen, and we went out, he and I went out and picked apples for the cider pressing, which was a great hit. I mean, we just made, I don't know, we probably made 15 gallons of cider and froze a bunch of it, so we'll have it all winter. But yeah, I mean...
I hope you froze a bunch of it. Otherwise, consuming... You know, 5 gallons of.
Yeah, I have 1 gallon in the refrigerator that's fermenting now, so I'm trying to drink it quickly before it gets too far gone. Don't want to turn it to vinegar, but basically, you know, with listeners have kids or grandkids, or you know, getting them involved in gardening is just a joy.
I mean,
I love seeing watching them dig potatoes. It's just such a hoot, you know.
Yeah, don't you know. Hey, you know, if I can just be biased here, you know, don't start your kids on radishes.
Right.
I mean, they're easy to grow. It's actually harder to grow a nice mild radish. But, you know, is a kid going to be beaming? pulling out a nice little red radish would be kind of fun.
Well, after they dug the potatoes, there's Grandpa and me with about 200 pounds of potatoes on a garden cart, you know, pushing them back to the shed. And, you know, it was an amazing amount of food.
Well, what do you do with all those potatoes if you haven't been eating
them? Last year, our friend Andre was here from Russia, and he loves potatoes, we ate a lot of them. This year, Lorraine was just sharing with me this morning recipes, primarily soups. Different kinds of soups with potatoes. I think that's going to be what we're going to be eating here for pretty soon is some potato, different kinds of potato soup.
All right.
So
Well, just let Joe and me know and we'll be over.
Sure.
Okay, well, so that's good. Let's see. Oh, another thing, just to, before we finish up on the leaves here, another thing that I do is I've got a big Gravenstein, standard Gravenstein. It's just too big. I'm whacking it down gradually, and hopefully I'll get it taken out at some point. But anyway, rather than picking up the leaves, I just rake them into the garden beds, and they will break down there. And if there's any disease or whatnot on there, I'll throw some maybe fresh compost on top of those, or other wood chips rather than leaves. But it's just easy. Just rake them into the beds.
Sure. Yeah,
so don't have to, and it's probably better to do that than to leave them on the grass, which is what it is, just for the grass's sake.
And you know, I also, when you talk about raking and picking up leaves in the streets, just think of the good exercise that is.
Indeed,
you don't have to pay for it. You don't. It's not, no, it's just go out and get some good hard work. You know.
Yeah,
you know, it's great.
Maybe we should charge for our radio program here.
Jim and Glenn's health.
The dirt bag.
The health exercise. Bag.
Right. The health bag. Right. Okay. Well, unless something else comes up to me, we'll leave leaves for now. And that'll take us to our first musical break. Now, all of these leaves that I'm talking about, what's an extra nice benefit is that they are free. In fact, another place that you can go to get leaves is oftentimes parks. The Portland parks will have big machines that will vacuum up their leaves and into a big trailer tub, and they'll dump them, waiting for the big dump trucks to come pick them up or to dispose of them. And I don't think they'd mind one bit if you took a few sacks full or something like that.
Right. Don't take our leaves.
Right. You wouldn't want to jump into those piles. They're pretty solid.
I bet.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So anyway, the leaves are free, and that is the theme of all of our tunes today. The first one is a cover from Nina Simone. I wish I knew how it feels, or how it would feel, to be free. Nina Simone, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free.
Great song.
Yes, indeed. Okay, well, we've done a little bit of talk about the apple cider. I do want to ask about the varieties. Do you have any recollection of what varieties you were able to harvest in September, October?
That's a good question, Glenn.
Was it October?
Yes. Well, that's when we started harvesting a little before then. But the main variety that we have a lot of here, which is a variety that we've propagated in the past, and I'm hoping we will start again, is called Wine Crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
an old standard, isn't it?
No, actually, it's a fairly new one.
Oh, what am I thinking of?
Yeah, I think it's from Purdue University and
Wine Sap.
Yeah, Wine Sap is. Yeah, and I think Wine Crisp is a cross, perhaps of Honey Crisp and Wine Sap. I'm not totally certain about that, but it's a very heavy bearer. And we're fairly late, but we can store it. I was eating them in March last year, fruit that I'd picked in October. So that was kind of the main one, plus Gold Rush apples, which we have quite a few of here.
So you picked them off the tree. They didn't come from storage.
These are all picked off the tree.
Yeah.
We picked them. I started picking a couple of weeks before the cider pressing.
Yeah.
And any apple will work, you know, for cider. It's nice if you have something with some good flavor, because, of course, your cider is not going to be just bland. And you can mix. It's fun to mix things. I want to do more of that in the future. I didn't do much of it this time, but, you know, there's another variety called Enterprise, which we had a lot of. And you can use it. You can start pressing cider early too. I mean, you can do it with things like, you know, Williams Pride. Of course, Gravenstein makes excellent cider.
Yeah, my Gravenstein is done by mid August.
Yeah. So, you know, anyway, it's a great thing to do. And if you can have a place to freeze some juice, then you can keep it, you know, into the winter and drink it all winter long. So. But I think the part of the fun of it is the family gathering, the getting together and doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is really part of the joy of making cider and getting your friends to come or whatever, and just everybody takes home some and enjoys it while you're making it. And the only thing is, you got to stick around to help clean up.
And you have to have the press.
And you need the press,
here.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a sticking point there.
Yeah.
I wonder if the tool libraries have apple presses.
I don't know about that. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Be a good thing, because most people don't need them, you know, well, everybody needs them at once type thing. But.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I mean, we don't have one out here, so I don't know anything about tool libraries. So,
yeah. Okay, good. Well, and we forgot to sample the pineapple guava in our first break there, but you've been harvesting them and the quince.
That's right. The pineapple guava is really a remarkable fruit, I think. And we've been lucky to, in our trips to New Zealand, and we went three times to New Zealand before the pandemic hit, and we met breeders there, and we were able to import new varieties. So this is one of those new varieties. And the fruit is large. And ripens early. I mean,
Joe's giving us the thumb up.
It is. Okay. Well, let's each have a piece here, Glenn.
We can do this on the air?
Well, I'm not going to do it into the microphone, but.
Okay. Here, let's do a little taste test here.
And there's one thing you can do.
That's good.
You can eat
I'll finish that during the break.
Sure. And you can eat it like a watermelon. Without eating the skin. But for me, one of the tests of pineapple guava is having a skin that's edible too.
Mm.
And also have a thin skin. Kind of an interesting story. Back in 2015, after Lorraine and I took a trip to Brazil, where pineapple guava is native, and we were treated to a tasting there of some varieties they had developed. It was very interesting to us, because Brazil, actually, the climate in Brazil is not as favorable for pineapple guava as it is in New Zealand and here in Oregon. And so these varieties they had bred to have a thick skin. And it was sort of like taking an avocado, eating the seed, and throwing the rest away, which was for us, just, you know, we thought, well, this is really too bad, because they had to do this thick breed for these thick skins because they had pests and diseases that would attack the fruit, which we don't have here.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, and of course, pineapple guava has also got beautiful flowers. It's a neat evergreen shrub. I just think it should be widely planted.
Yeah. Well, this was the largest fruit I've seen.
Mm-hmm. And you can't used to be able to get them in stores, but they're not anymore. They're not available.
Hmm. Well, so maybe we could change that there. Joe, you ate the whole thing.
The skin's really good.
Skin's really good. Yeah. So that's good breeding, Jim.
Yeah, we're really excited to have the option to have these varieties. And just for listeners to think about, so Kakariki, Anatoki, these are New Zealand names.
Like our listeners are going to remember that.
Sure,
right?
Sure. But yeah, but you'll see if you go to One Green World has them on their nursery website. So Kakariki, Anatoki, Kaitiri, Takaka, Wainaro, which is spelled Waignaro.
What's this big one that we just ate here?
That's Kakariki.
Uh-huh. And what's the smaller one there?
That's actually also Kakariki.
Oh,
that's
I
just
see.
Sort of, you can have small and big on the same plant. But,
Well, they look kind of, the small one there looks kind of like, just to describe it, looks kind of like a lemon, lime color and shape. It's not as textured as a lime skin would be, but it's a little smaller than a hen's egg, but about the same shape as that.
Mm-hmm. The big one was like a small pear.
Yeah. A palish green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the quince here.
Yes. Well, that's another fun fruit. Big, yellow, striking on the tree. I mean, it's almost like having flowers, big yellow flowers, because I was out picking them, and they just like stood out, like they're so bright yellow.
When you pick them, do you have to clip them?
Nope, but I learned a kind of a twisting pick.
Oh,
you sort of like twist and pull. You can't yank on them.
Yeah.
But you kind of twist them as you sort of, I don't know, the right word would be a wrist movement that breaks them off at the stem. They just come off right at the tip of the fruit.
Yeah, I remember on mine it works better to clip them, or it did work better to clip them.
I can demonstrate sometime, Glenn, if you'd like to see how I've learned this professional method that I've learned.
Okay. And what variety is this one?
This is called Crimea.
Crimea. I have no idea what mine are. I should have brought one in so you could... Well, identify it.
Well, I'm not sure I can identify them, but they're
many. What's his name? John. John from the Home Orchard Society.
Mm.
he was my guest on one time.
Yes, I remember.
But he was a quince aficionado.
Yeah. Well, there are many, many years ago, there were a number of varieties imported from the former Soviet Union that were sweet quince compared to the old traditional ones that were grown here for many, many years. And that's what this is. This is one of those newer types.
So, how sweet?
Well, you can, I mean, theoretically eat it like an apple, although it's just not really quite as good as an
Joe,
apple.
Joe, would you like to take a bite of this? No. No, he's going to pass on that one.
But the quince are typically, you do something with them. You know, quince crisp is something I love making, like apple crisp, but make it with quince instead.
I like quince preserves. It's a nice, beautiful red color when it's cooked.
Yeah.
The flesh is white-ish.
When you cook them, they do turn red. And there's many things you can do with them. And so I actually have a book that I wanted to tell the listeners about. It's called Simply Quince, by Barbara Gazarian, and it has a lot of quince recipes in it. And it's worth going online and getting this book if you're interested in reading about quince. That's she wrote it. She came to Oregon because we have at our USDA germplasm repository this collection of varieties down in Corvallis. They have quince there, so she came out to introduce her book to the quince folks.
Okay, excellent.
And they're heavy. I mean, they're big fruit, too, which is kind of interesting. I mean,
let's, it's half past the hour. Actually, it's past half past the hour. Whew. You know what time it is, Joe?
Oh.
Joe was right.
Time.
Yes, indeed. It is time for the garden's number. And Jim's got one.
Yes. And it's kind of interesting. I hope to the listeners to think about this for a minute. So quince and virtually every fruiting plant that we can grow, they have flowers.
Indeed.
And some cases, the flowers are quite attractive. Pineapple guava, for example, has striking flowers with edible petals, so you can eat them. Mm-hmm. They're tasty. Well, one of my favorite fruits, and a very delicious fruit that we can grow here in our west of the Cascade location, is the fig. And as all other fruiting plants do, figs have flowers. However, you can't see them. Where are they?
That's the stumper.
That's the stumper.
Okay.
Where are the fig flowers?
If you have... Joe's looking under the his equipment. He can't find it. If you know the answer to that, where are the fig flowers? You'll have to email us. thedirtbag@kboo.org.
And the prize for getting the first
once again,
correct
yes,
answer?
The first correct answer will get a free, or is entitled to, a free sharpening of a hand garden tool. This can include pruners, loppers, shovels, hose, and hand tools. Maybe yep. A hand scythe. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And where do they get that?
Oh, yes, that would be at Coley Farm Store.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
That's right.
On 42nd and Alberta, you said.
Alberta Street, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Northeast.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on here. And as we move further into November and into December, the plants are dormant. They're just not growing. They're still alive, but they're dormant. And this is an excellent time to transplant plants or to divide them. And there's probably other edible plants that you can divide, like Jerusalem artichoke comes to mind, but I don't grow that, so I don't know. Have you ever any experience with that?
No.
I just understand it spreads and spreads and spreads.
Maybe it doesn't need dividing.
Well, if you want growing space, you kind of have to dig it out, sure. Which always reminds me that, you know, one of my adages is, tongue in cheek, you know, don't accept free plants.
Hmm.
Because why is it free? They're plentiful. And if it's plentiful for them, it's going to be plentiful for you, and then it's in the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I get that adage. Actually, I made that adage up, so it's not an adage.
Well, but having, you know, running a nursery out here, I mean, we don't accept free plants because you have to buy them to keep us
true.
In business.
That's right. That's what I say in the honey business, that it's, you know, when I charge, you know, a premium for the honey, I said, it's not going to do either of us any good if I go out of business.
That's right.
So, yeah. Hey, that reminds me, the one thing I wanted to mention, which is not related to anything except that it has to do with pollinators. And we talked about flowers. This last weekend was the Oregon State Beekeepers Conference. It was in Florence, but I did it. I took the Zoom method. And it's through the Oregon Bee Lab, the Oregon State Bee Lab at Oregon State University, and I think it's through mostly through OSU, but possibly the Oregon State Beekeepers Association has proposed, and if we can pre-sell 3,000, we will have a customized pollinator license plate for Oregon. Very pretty. It's got a native bee as well as a honeybee. And if we can pre-sell 3,000 of these, then the state will do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do it.
Okay.
It's a beautiful, beautiful. And too bad. Maybe I'll try to post that on the website.
Sure. Good idea. How much does it cost for somebody to get it?
Well, it would be the normal. I haven't bought it yet or pledged it yet. But I think that regular is what? Can you remember? I haven't done mine recently. Is it $30 or $60 or something like that? And so I think it's $60 or $90. You know, so it's a fundraiser too, yeah, just sure. like all of them are.
Sure.
The salmon and the wine and whatnot. But pollinators is very colorful. I like that part too. So, oh, anyway, I'll try to remember to do that.
Tell us more next time too.
Okay. So dividing plants now, particularly rhubarb. I can't think of any other edible plants that you would divide such that needs dividing. You know, maybe asparagus. You know, if it just starts getting so crowded, they don't produce as well. And that this is very true with rhubarb too. And I think it's very easy to do it. What I would recommend doing is digging up the whole clump that you're going to divide. If you're going to divide it in half or in quarters, probably quarters would be better, just because a little smaller chunk would give you another year or two before you would need to do it again. I mean, an additional year or two, probably every 4 or 5 years you might think about dividing it. But dig up the whole clump and then get two shovels and put them back to back, stab them in the middle, and then just split the rhubarb apart. You're not down there finessing it apart. You're going to ruin some, but there's so much anyway. And then you can do the same with the other chunks, you know, to quarter it. Just put them back to back, or you might want to make one stab with one shovel and then the other stab with it, trying to hit the same spot. Mm-hmm. And or a hatchet or something like that would probably work too. You can be pretty brutal. And there, you know, they only need one shoot, if you will. When I divide rhubarb, it seems a shame, but I just don't have places to put all the divides. But it's better for your original patch to start over. So you can put one back to right where it was. I don't know about any diseases really for our rhubarb that would preclude you from planting it in the same spot. But yeah. Rhubarb is pretty easy.
What about like raspberries? Wouldn't you? I've never done it, but couldn't you be able to divide raspberries?
Well, you could, but they send up runners so much that you would just pull up runners. Pull it up and plant it where you want it.
Yeah, sort of like strawberries too would be the same.
Yes. Although with strawberries, it seems like you should start over, you know, every 3 or 4 years or so, mm-hmm. those clumps. And raspberries just keep dividing, you know, because the old ones die out,
right?
And you harvest from the new. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It would be the time to transplant.
Yes, for sure.
Those, right.
Yeah, once they lose their leaves, I mean, you know, which is happening now, things are...
The raspberries or anything?
Anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm going to be transplanting some milkweed to a place. It's not edible, except for the monarch butterfly larvae. That's the only plant that the monarch butterfly larvae feed on. Hmm. The only plant. Hmm. The adults feed on nectar from various plants, including the milkweed, but the larvae chew the leaves of the milkweed, the monarch. Chew the leaves of the milkweed, the larvae. So there's a big push to get that out. And cool. I've got to play. And it spreads. It's, you know, it can be a weed.
Yeah, I think I was surprised when you said that. But
you know, one other thing that I heard from the conference that stuck with me is that the beekeeping conference is that somebody was presenting on, I think it was, you know, bee plants or something like that. And the standard is if something is just, you don't know where it's come from, you call it wildflower honey. Mm-hmm. And they renamed one like that comes from milkweed or other things that are just in drainage ditches or whatnot, but apparently it was known as ditch honey.
Oh, that's appealing.
Yeah. Good call there on with the wildflower.
That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, from what I understand, milkweed just, you know, grows all over in some places, or it used to. Mm-hmm. But now it's been.
Yeah. I think I'd stick with wildflower.
Yeah. Right.
Much
we'll
nicer.
Go there too. So.
Yeah.
All right. So that is, that's enough on dividing plants. Let's take our second musical break here. This is, Roger Daltrey, who you've already heard today, lead singer for The Who. But this is him solo. Free Me. Roger Daltrey, you know, he's got some pipes too. Not like Nina Simone. They're different pipes. But yeah, he could do it, and he's still doing it. In fact, yeah, The Who is coming to the Portland. The Portland, did I say?
The Portland. where in the Portland are
I
they
think
coming?
It's at the Moda Center.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I recently went to a John Prine event at the Alberta Rose Theater a couple of weeks ago. It was frustrating a little bit because John Prine, I only got to know him after he died. I heard his songs, but I didn't know who he was. And I really really fell in love with his music and his songwriting. So I was expecting like a acoustic performance because his words are what are so important. And unfortunately, the first three sets, they came out with this really loud, amplified music, and you couldn't understand the words. So I wrote to him and I said, louder is not better. So anyway.
I frequently think that, in performances, they should have subtitles like they do. I always have that on for PBS shows and whatnot, yeah, those English shows. I can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, then they got better. It was better at later, but it was, I really, really enjoy the words that he wrote.
And, yeah. They used to start it out as a letter carrier. Mm-hmm. That'd be fodder for lyrics.
Yeah, for sure.
All day out there looking at people. And, uh-huh. Right. Okay, Jim. Our dirtbag dictionary term. Define away.
Yes. Parthenocarpy. Well, which this is a fascinating characteristic of plants because there are, Glenn, as you're a person, raise bees and make honey and stuff, and bees are pollinators, and they do their job moving pollen from flower to flower to pollinate them and cause fruit to set. And there are fruits that require cross-pollination from more than one variety, which, we just want to talk about that when we're thinking about what do you want to grow, do you need to plant a second variety? In some cases, there are self-fertile varieties that do not require another variety, but even in those cases, the pollen is still moved from one flower to another by some means, in most cases insects, but it can even be by wind. But there are fruit varieties that can bear fruit without any pollination. And that process, that phenomenon is called parthenocarpy.
Let's break that down. Okay. What do those words mean?
Good question.
Oh, okay. Well, generally when you have a word like that, if you know the meanings of those words, then it helps you understand it. It's like, okay, this doesn't, the comedian Stephen Wright?
I don't.
Yeah, he had a deadpan delivery. And for example, he would say, just monotone voice, you know. I made instant coffee in a microwave and almost went back in time. But he said, it's hard to understand what's going on in our world. Things are just so disheveled and whatnot. You know, mankind is, what is the future of mankind? Sometimes it helps to break the words down and to help us understand what's going on. So for mankind, he says, we have Mank and Eind. It makes no sense. And there we are in the world. So anyway.
Right. Well, Parthen and Carpi is probably, there's probably a Latin root for all of that.
Okay, yes, it is. Yes, Joe not only is our ace engineer, but our ace
researcher.
Thank you. That's the word here. Yeah, Parthenokarpy. Two Greek words. Parthenos is virgin, and karpos is fruit.
Yeah.
And then German, it's also Parthenokarpy. Well, it's spelled this differently, but same thing. And then early 20th century came Parthenokarpy. Virgin fruit. So explain again what it means.
Well, it means that a particular variety or type of fruit, a plant can bear it without pollination.
Yes, without sex.
Without sex.
Virgin. Yeah.
It's a virgin fruit.
Yeah. That's Mary fruit.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And virgin fruit.
And you know, some interesting characteristic things about that. I won't give away the answer to the garden stumper, but I will tell you that there are fig varieties or partial varieties, you could say, of figs that are parthenocarpic.
What are some other examples of parthenocarpic fruit?
And I was told that strawberry is one of those.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
Although I have heard people say, oh, I have strawberry honey.
Yeah.
But I never see bees on their blossoms. Mm-hmm. Or very rarely do
yeah.
I see it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and what the interesting thing with figs, for example, is that Desert King, which is one of our most popular varieties here in the Northwest and really very reliable, it's a type of fig called San Pedro. And the Braba crop, which is the crop that grows on the old wood, the wood from last year, is parthenocarpic. But the second crop, requires pollination.
Uh-huh. And they're the ones that stick to my shoes all the time that I'm walking.
Because we don't have the pollinator of figs, which would be another garden stumper, so I won't tell much more about that particular phenomenon.
Yeah,
But because we don't have that pollinator around here, the second crop doesn't ripen on a Desert King.
Joe, can you find out what there might be some other parthenocarpic crops that we grow here? I think it'd be very interesting to know because, for one, they wouldn't require cross-pollination.
That's right.
So you'd only need one
of
those plants.
Yep.
So apples, for example, aren't.
Well, definitely.
Right.
Are not parthenocarpic.
Okay, here we have. Okay, we can rule out a couple of these right away.
Yeah.
Pineapple.
Okay, can't grow it here.
Banana. Cucumber. That's interesting. Cucumber doesn't require pollination, and yet it might do better with pollination.
And yes. Yeah.
Right. Grape. That makes sense too. Watermelon, orange, grapefruit, pear?
There may be some pears, but not the ones I'm familiar with.
These develop without fertilization and are often seedless.
And there's an interesting word that they use in that definition.
Thank you, Joe.
Fertilization. I have a little trouble with that because I think you should be using the word pollination.
Well, let me explain it to you then.
Okay.
Pollinization is when the pollen actually lands on the sticky stigma. Mm-hmm. So either the wind or an insect gets it there.
Right.
But you can have pollinization without fertilization because after the pollen gets there, it has to grow down the ovule or the tube, excuse me, to reach the ovule where the fruit would form then. And it only has oh, it's temperature dependent, and it might only have a week or so before the pollen maybe degrades or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes while you might have great blossoms, you may not have good fruit. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you can have pollination without fertilization.
Interesting.
Joe says fertilization requires more romantic music. So what I often say when I say you can have pollinization without fertilization is that humans do this all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing I say about that.
Mm-hmm. Especially on the air, right?
That's all I'm going to say on that.
Okay.
So, but that's the difference there. And I learned most of this from our comrade, Ted. Mm-hmm. Ted Swenson.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so now we know. So now we have Parthenocarpi. We've figured that's really great. I really appreciate that, the learning, having those Greek words put into that, too.
Yes, right.
That's
so
cool.
So Parthenon is virgin.
Yeah, virgin fruit.
And yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we have a couple minutes, Jim, to talk a little bit more about olives.
Sure. Well, as I explained, I think in the previous show, I had gone with my partner, Lorraine. We traveled, did a round-the-world trip in 19 days, which is a little tough for jet lag.
But it seems like you've recovered now.
I feel much better this show than I did the last one.
Even though you were back for five or some days or, something,
it took,
or a week.
It took at least a week and a half to kind of get back to sort of normalcy, and even longer than that. But they say it takes a day for every hour you're changing that time. You should have a day to recover. And I didn't have 24 days to get over 24 hours of time change. But anyway, the olive part of the journey, we focused on Italy, and we were able to go to some really interesting places that where they grow olives. In one spot we visited, they are sometimes harvest olives in the snow. And higher
on purpose, or just because they have to?
No, it's because they have to, because higher elevation. And I would say, like olives are kind of like apples are here. I mean, they are for Italy, people have been growing it for centuries.
These trees can live for...
They've lived for a really long time.
Thousand years, haven't they?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Oh, yeah, thousands of years. And I would say that the Italian nature is that just they're determined to grow olives.
I see.
And so even if they live in a place that's not really, what you would think is an olive-growing region, they're growing olives, and they have done this for so long that they've developed varieties that are compatible and grow in those spots. And they primarily do two things with olives. One is to make oil, and the other is to make fruit. We've talked about a little bit before, I've questioned in Oregon there's some interest now in growing olives, but I question the feasibility of growing olives for oil here. I think there's so much good olive oil on the market grown in places like Italy, Spain, and Greece that it's pretty tough to compete with that. But I think the table olives, the curing of olives to eat in a home basis or even on a small scale commercial basis would be a good thing to
do. Much higher value.
Much higher value.
Yeah.
And they're very good to eat, and people love them and all that. So,
I don't know that I've ever had an Oregon-grown olive. Hint, hint.
In 1 month from now, I'm actually curing olives right now. And if everything goes well, a month from now, we can have some here at the show.
Okay, just one. That's all I need, just a sample.
Just one.
Yeah. Well, I would eat more, but...
Yeah,
I don't want to mooch.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so we're really interested in olives, and I think our interest is not just the actual fruit itself, but it's the whole culture around it. And
that'd be fun to try to import some of that too.
Yeah, we would. It would. Okay. And we met some really wonderful people on this trip. So
maybe we'll get part three next month.
Sure.
But we're out of time for this time.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Jim.
Yeah,
I appreciate
welcome.
That. Thanks, Joe. Been very helpful as usual. And gosh, we appreciate you. It's great. Just high quality. And he's a very easygoing.
Brings out all the right equipment out here to the liberal nook.
Yeah. The recording Dacha. Is it Dacha?
Dacha.
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 That's Russian. I wonder what German might be different.
It might be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening to The Dirtbag. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back another recorded show for December. But that's the way it is. Hopefully we'll be back live in January. We'll go out with our last tune, a Crusaders tune called Free as the Wind. Thanks for listening. Be well.
To KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.